Accession number 23848, Rail 4.
Mr. Wildgust, Rail 4. Right, Mr. Wildgust, you mentioned that this business of a possibility of commission. Did you discuss that with your friends at all?
No, not at all. Alan and Simkin, I think, had already been recommended in themselves. I had a fellow called Bagshaw and Burgess. But I was then sent on an NCO's course, which they had been on at Bestwood Lodge in Nottingham. And it was there I met Wally Binch of the Foresters and one or two others that I still keep in contact with. And we were subjected to this NCO's course. I've still got the report somewhere. Everything we had to do says good demonstration needs practice. I think everyone, but I finished up with quite a high grade. And it was whilst we were in Nottingham that I met my friend who I had mentioned before, Noel Selby, who was home on leave. And we went out together to a pub in Nottingham called the Moot Hall, went to his home, and heard a whistle overhead and looked at each other and said, "I wonder what that is." And went outside and found the whole of the sky was ablaze, and it was a big air raid on Nottingham. The pub we'd been in got a direct hit, and the whistle we heard destroyed a post office about 200 yards away and killed the people. And I walked back to Bestwood Lodge, and I didn't even think of ringing up my family, who were in Nottingham at the time, which was rather strange, because I sort of divorced from reality. Never expected them to anything to be wrong, but it never even sort of occurred to me that it might be a good idea to ring up and see if they're all right. And I just remember walking back and watching Nottingham burn and going to bed about 2 o'clock in the morning. The next day I went into town and met one or two friends and saw the damage, and that was just an interim, but it was quite interesting that I just happened to be in Nottingham on the night that there was a big raid. But I went to back to Grimsby, and then we were moved from Grimsby to Woodhall Spa in Lincolnshire, where we were in a camp at a place called Rooton Moor. I was at Woodhall Spa only last month, actually, and you can still see the campsite. There are still traces of where the huts were and the roads through the lines, but it hadn't been built on or anything like that. And I'd been before, 20 or 30 years after the war, and the bases of the Nissen huts were all complete. But we were there, and this is when we first started our cross-country running and large route marches. And there are photographs in existence now of the cross-country running team and the football team. And whereas at Waltham we'd had a lot of air raids, but generally passing over when they were bombing Hull, Woodhall Spa we got more air raids because they were bombing the airfield at Coningsby and Woodhall Spa, where the dam busters flew from, and Lancaster generally, the pathfinders and so on and so forth. And it was at Woodhall Spa when we went on leave at Christmas, came back and the Winter Gardens had disappeared, that had been bombed, and but our lines were okay and nobody suffered any problems then.
I just want to go back to initial training in the army and training as an NCO. Was there anybody within the squad of recruits, the initial squad of recruits, that just, I mean, you mentioned a couple that were that you said worked the ticket, but was anybody that just couldn't deal with aspects of the training, or what aspects were the most difficult for you to deal with? What did you just take to it? Did everybody just
take it? There weren't, actually. I mean, we were all very fit. I think that's the main thing you can say. I mean, they say now that, of course, people during the war, although they were rationed, the food they got was good. And I think it's been borne out by the fact that most people who experienced those times, and particularly that time, they were fit and we were kept on the move all the time. There was a hell of a lot of heavy work to do. I mean, we were digging and lifting and putting these defences up. In fact, there's quite an amusing story about that, actually, from Waltham, because of the civil engineer there. Was a fellow who called himself, I mean, I've forgotten his name now, but he was Major so-and-so. And we even turned the guard out and presented arms to him, although he was in civilian clothes. And he eventually came and said that he'd been promoted to Lieutenant Colonel. And whenever he went into the mess, he was always offered drinks. And some months later, there was an article in the Grimsby Telegraph or whatever paper it was to say that this chap had been arrested for wearing a uniform to which he was not entitled. He'd been discharged from the army in the First World War as a sergeant, and he was sent to prison. In the meantime, of course, all the messes throughout Lincolnshire, RAF and army, had been giving him hospitality, and they all wanted the money, but they never got it. But that was he was a con man. He was also arrested, or the firm were, because they built these slit trenches and defences and missed out the mortar in about a third course of bricks. So when you put your hand on the top, they wobbled. So they were done for that as well. But that's a little side story about it.
Now, going back to this initial period, in terms of the discipline, how was that enforced? Did you have much contact with officers, or was it mainly NCOs? Which NCOs would be?
Well, the officers were by our standards, they were young. They didn't. There was one in Nottingham called Stonard, who I think I described. He treated the soldiers rather like a headmaster would. They were all fairly useless, quite honestly. I mean, they didn't have much about them. They didn't imbue you with confidence. One or two were pleasant and quite nice, but they didn't fill you with confidence. I mean, I don't think there are any that you would have sort of, you couldn't imagine following them into action. The NCOs, of course, again, were quite young. One or two of them, there was a Sergeant Rice, who is now dead, who I met after I was commissioned. He was more of a soldier, if you could put it that way. He was military looking and he acted militarily. I forgot the other sergeant's name. Some of them tried to put it on a bit because we were only 18, and they were probably old at 20. They were old men at 20, but generally speaking, they were quite good at what they did, but they didn't imbue you with much. In fact, I never even thought of being in action by this time because we'd had 2 years of doing sort of hanging around England, and the thought of combat had never entered anybody's minds, really. It was the only thing we had to worry about in those days seemed to be low-flying aircraft and bombing, you know, sort of, which the civilians were putting up with anyway. But the thought of being in action as such was the last thing in anybody's mind.
Now, you've mentioned earlier, you know, your introduction to the rifle, to the Byzantine rifle, and so on. Now, you've been instructed in drill instruction and all the rest of it. You're doing these guard duties with a rifle and five rounds. When you had your uniform on, when you walking out in your uniform, did you feel like a soldier yet, or did you still feel you had?
Yes, because by the time we were at Waltham, we got full equipment and we had the Bren gun, which had come into being, of course, which was. And we're also in a position when we went on the range, we could fire quite a lot of ammunition. I mean, probably up to 20 rounds or that sort of thing. I mean, they wouldn't only do they'd do grouping shots and not only scoring shots but grouping shots, both with rifle and Mbrengen.
What does grouping mean? What does that mean?
It was when you'd see how near you can get. It doesn't matter what part of the target is on. Get them as close together as possible.
Were you a good shot?
Yes, it was actually. Yes, it was quite good. Funny enough, I did a bit of air rifle shooting last month, and I got some very good grouping. First thing I said was, "My God, that's good grouping." But yes, I was quite a good shot.
What about the general standard within the squad? Within the
It was pretty high.
Was there anybody?
I'd say it was quite good.
So most people took to the.
Yeah.
What about the Bren gun? How did you cope with that?
Well, they all said that the trouble with the Bren gun was too accurate. It was easier to fire. It was easier to fire than a rifle because, of course, there was virtually no recoil, and. The only thing there, which I know now from later experience, was that there were people who, although they were taught it, they didn't really understand it and they didn't quite know what they were supposed to do when they got it. I mean, that came into in action when I came across that. But
we'll talk about that then. What about grenades? Had you been introduced to them this time?
Yes, we'd only had. As far as I remember, instruction on dummy grenades and putting in dummy fuses into dummy grenades and putting the pin and showing how it worked. It wasn't until later that we had actual throwing of live grenades.
Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about the NCO's course, but before we talk about that, during this early phase, had you been instructed in so-called field craft? Had they taken you out?
Could you
talk a little bit about that? What they tried to teach you and how they...
Yes, it was very elementary, sort of... I mean, you thought you were a bigger soldier if you got a net on your helmet, because generally speaking, you didn't get the mesh on your helmet, you had a bare one. But of course, if you got a mesh in your helmet, you could stick things into it, you see, and it made you look a bit more like a soldier. But, yes, there was all sort of cover from view and cover from fire and that sort of thing, and patrols, patrol activity. It was all really taken from manuals which had been written in the 1914-18 war, and... We're not altogether up to date in that respect, but basically it was. We did most things one way or another.
Can you remember what company you were in within the 70th Battalion during this?
It was C Company at Waltham. A Company, I think, was at. A Company was at Nottingham, and then there was B Company at Binbrook, and C Company at Waltham, and then there was another one at Kidby Bridge, where they guarded the bridge over the Trent. And they moved around. Waltham and Binbrook and Manton, I think it is in Lincolnshire. We went to Binbrook once for... anti-aircraft fire with Bren guns or Lewis guns, camera guns actually, but we never saw the results, and I've got an idea now that they never put film in them, and we were happily pretending to fire, and they, which I'm sure, because otherwise they'd let us see what results we got. But a plane did fly over us, forward and backwards and sideways, that sort of thing. But I remember it was damn cold up there. In fact, those two, 39 and 40 and 41 winters, were very cold indeed. And when we were at Woodhall Spa, the snow came down, and it was decided that we would move, and we moved in trucks about 1 o'clock in the morning in driving snow, and we drove right through Lincolnshire to North Lincolnshire, Hebblestow and Curtin Lindsay, where another aerodrome was presented to us. And this aerodrome was a fighter squadron on it, Polish, I believe, and it was absolutely, it must have been 2 feet thick, apart from the runways, which we had to clear. And I'd been on guard the night before in Woodhall Spa, and when we got to the aerodrome, Redbourne, Hibblestow aerodrome, the officer said, "Want to volunteer?" So I volunteered to take a guard, because I was a lance corporal by this time. And we went on to the aerodrome guard room, and when morning came, they couldn't get us off. So I was there another night on guard.
What do you mean they couldn't get them off? They couldn't get you off?
They couldn't get trucks to us because of the snow. It was so bad. And eventually, after the second night, we got off, and I went back to the main lines, and I found myself on guard again. And the next thing I remember was that I was standing to attention asleep, and at least waking up, and this officer called Lieutenant Malloy was saying, "If this is the way you expect to get a commission, you won't get a commission falling asleep." And I said, "Well, I've been on duty for 3 nights on the trot, sir." But he said, "You know, sort of don't do it anymore." But God, I was tired that after that. And it was bitter. It really was bitterly cold. And I can't remember much more about that place. It was there that I left with Simpkins and Alan and Martin. Martin, incidentally, was the 2nd and 5th Foresters' first casualty in Tunisia. Alan, as I say, became Lieutenant Colonel of the 1st Battalion after the war. And Simpkins, I met after the war, he was a bank manager. But we all departed for Bransmouth in Durham on a pre-octu course, which had been preceded by an interview in Lincoln Barracks. When we were successful, one or two weren't. There was one fellow called Bagshaw who was turned down. He did get a commission later on, but he was turned down at the time. But we four, after our interview in Lincoln, had been okayed to go further, and we were sent, let's say, to...
Could you just describe the process of the interview? What kind of questions they were asking you, and any memories of the kind of...
That is one thing I can't remember. I remember going into the place, and there were probably three officers who sat there, and they should have just asked you general questions. But apart from that, I can't remember anything at all.
How do you think Bagshaw went wrong? Did you talk about that afterwards? What that he might have...
Well, I saw a report. When I was commissioned... Well, I had strange experiences, inasmuch as when I was commissioned, I was sent back to my old battalion, which had changed its name, number, but it was the original battalion. So my NCOs had been my superiors, and the officers who had been my superiors were now on a par, you know, apart from the fact they were probably got a higher rank. And then after that, after I'd been wounded, I was sent to 11th York and Lancs, which happened to be the same battalion again. So I went back to the same side of the street. So I kept in contact with all these people, you see. And I read, when I was commissioned, I read a report on this fellow Bagshaw, where a fellow called Lieutenant Young had put, "He's not as dim as he's cabbage looking," or something like that. And I thought, well, that's not a very nice thing to say, because this fellow Young was not of the highest quality. In fact, he was demoted later on. But I think it's the way you present yourself. Bagshaw, I met him after the war. He'd had a he'd had a stroke and was rather unintelligible, but he stayed in the army after the war. But he did lack something. And I think with these interviews, you've got to be... Well, I suppose I appeared positive. I don't know. I think you've got to be positive.
So what do you think they were looking for from the potential candidates?
I suppose they were looking for what they term natural leaders, but I know they hadn't got a lot of them in the army at the time. I mean, not from what they got from left over from the Territorial Army and the rest of it. I don't know quite. The higher you get in the army, the dafter it appears in many instances. It's funny because now on television when you see commissioned officers of majors and brigadiers, they're quite normal people. In fact, some of them are a bit too normal, but in the higher ranks, though, you're still getting these double-barreled names and this sort of airy-fairy attitude to... I've always thought, and I think there's a lot into it, particularly the guards, the officers are there to lead. The NCOs are there to enforce the discipline and keep things going. But officers in many of the better regiments, if you put it that way, are really expendable, providing they can bring their men on in the old system. I think an example of that was in the Falklands with old Jones. I mean, he needn't have done what he did, but they were quite unnecessary, any more than what I did was unnecessary, but they are. There are a lot of commissioned officers who don't know how to lead, and it's just too bad. But they are.
Was there a feeling, did you have a feeling of that at the time, that looking at the officers that you'd encountered prior to going in for officer training, well, was there a feeling that, well, I could do that, I could do as well as him? Was that?
Yes, I didn't. Funny enough, I didn't sort of feel any. Didn't feel any enmity towards them. I didn't even wonder how they had gotten to their position. Because I was a bit naive, I suppose, in a way.
You mentioned earlier that when you went into the army, you went in with complete naivety about how the thing was organised.
Yeah.
Now, you've been in it for several months now.
Yeah.
You've mentioned the cookhouse and the possibility that your extra rations weren't, you know, would disappear. And that, how did that, you know, obviously...
I didn't feel any resentment about it. I sort of took it as being part and parcel of the game. And
you're obviously starting to get an idea of what the infantry were.
Yeah.
Hadn't had any second thoughts about the fact that you were
I didn't.
And that was going to be...
No, I mean, even on this aerodrome, I mean, we were there, you see, prior to the formation of the RAF regiment. As soon as we left aerodrome defence, the RAF regiment came into being and they took over. But I had no... No, I hadn't any second thoughts about it at all. I didn't look upon any other arm as being better. Well, I didn't even think... I mean, in a way, we felt the sort of service arm, RASC and the RAOC and the REME as it came, were very inferior. I mean, the only... In the army, you were in a regiment, and if you were in the infantry of the line, you were in the best going, even better than the guards.
Now, when you're on this airfield defence work... Were you able to mix socially with the RAF?
No, on these drones there were no RAF on at all. They were being formed for the RAF to take over. There were satellites. Redbourne, there were RAF there, but they were Polish. But no, we never came into contact with them at all. We were separate.
And so your food and so on, you weren't actually... It wasn't RAF accommodation, it was army.
No.
Yeah.
Well, they slept in beds with sheets and we slept on the floor again.
Were you aware of that at the time?
Yes, but then again, we sort of looked upon them as being a bit sissy to have to have beds and sheets, you see. I mean, they weren't very, not very tough.
Now, just going back to around this time of officer selection, would you have been disappointed if you had been rejected? This interview stage. Or would you have just accepted it?
I don't know whether I should, quite honestly. I'd have just taken it as part and part. I never expected to be rejected, but I don't know why I didn't, because there was no reason why I should have been. I had nothing particular to offer, apart from being a soldier, I suppose.
Now, before we talk about Brandsmith, I want to just go back, because we haven't covered this in enough detail, is the NCO's course you went on,
mm-hmm.
and what you were taught on this course that you hadn't been taught
in your basic
training.
It was, it was just like a basic recruits course, only a bit more. I believe we had to take drills, you know, give orders and that sort of thing. But it was not a very...
How did you take to giving orders?
May you go in front and take drill, you know, that sort of thing.
But did you take to it? Was it something that you that came naturally to you?
Oh, yes, yeah.
And so in terms of field craft or weapons training or something, there wasn't anything extra that you hadn't, in the sense of NCO's course, there wasn't anything that you hadn't?
No, there was nothing extraordinary about it at all. In fact, in a way, they could have really said that bloke looks as if he can do with a strike, we'll give him one. I mean,
And so you got your Lance Corporal stripe before you went up to Brandsmith.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, what did that mean in terms of pay?
Didn't. No, because it was an unpaid acting Lance Corporal.
Was that something that people resented, the acting, the wisdom of the acting Lance Corporal?
Not really, no.
Did that affect your relationship with friends in the platoon at all, or the fact that you'd got a stripe?
No, I don't remember ever anybody sort of using it against you or anything. They might have, they might have said, oh, all right, you got a stripe, but that's as far as it ever went. There was no animosity whatsoever.
So you were posted up to Brandsmith. Could you mm-hmm. describe what happened there and what you learned there and what they were trying to teach you?
Oh, that was, what the heck did they call it? I've got an IT, Infantry Training Company, ITC, Brandsmith Castle, and we duly arrived there, again in snow, and we were put in the rather better billets, if I remember rightly. We were in a wooden house, and I believe we had beds. And those that foregathered, there were about, if I say 24 or 30 of us, they were mixed ranks from sergeant down to Lance Corporal. It had to be a Lance Corporal, of course. And they came from all the Oxen Bucks Light Infantry, the Hampshire Regiment, well, from all over the country, actually. We were marched into the castle itself by an adjutant or somebody to meet the colonel. That was all. In fact, I don't know whether that was it. Anyway, we then had a long course, very much more, if you could, a selective course. You went into it far more. We did night manoeuvres, which is a thing we'd never done before. And of course, that was a mistake with the training in the army, was that they didn't concentrate enough on night manoeuvres, because in actual combat, you spent more time moving at night than you do in the day. But of course we resented it. We didn't really like going out at night, and there were better things to do. But I was ill once for a short couple of days, and I missed a scheme which went out onto the Northumberland hills, the Cheviots, and Pat had a terrible time with the snow. But we did various lorry motorized exercises, and of course went through all